It didn't make sense to me that you would take a risk on an individual.
But you wouldn't take a risk on a group.
On a group.
By just having a bank account, it means you are included.
To some extent, yes. You're going to be blacklisted in your community. That is far worse than a credit bureau blacklisting. Welcome to the Angled Podcast. This is something we've brought to you, where we go behind the stories that are published in our publishing partners, the Mail and Guardian and the Daily Maverick. And myself, Earl Joseph, and Stanley Molota over here, my colleague, we get to talk and disagree and agree and shout at each other about interesting things. Stan, financial inclusion. Don't fall asleep.
All right, I'm up.
Nah, man. No, listen, I think for me, one of the things that that really gets me is, you know, how people speak about economic development and that sort of thing. And yet there was a story that, you know, we had published as the Digital African Dr. Onko Kame
Mutubi.
Is it which way is it? Mutubi Onko Kame?
Mutubi is the last name. So it's Onko Kame.
I know, on WhatsApp he says Mutubi.
Hey, man. He prefers Mutubi because that's his last name.
Okay.
So it's Dr. Mutubi.
Is it? Okay. So, Onko Kame or Mutubi. You know,
he's the same person. You do know that, right?
Yeah. So he wrote a story about financial inclusion, right? And,
right.
And we published it in the Mail and Guardian for him. And he made obviously good points, right?
He did.
I mean, he brought, first of all, I didn't know what financial exclusion was from his perspective. And then I was trying to understand what financial inclusion was from, you know, so I went and I Googled, as you would. And what I discovered was that, well, the context within which he was speaking was that in 2017, I think he said a third of Africans live in extreme poverty.
A third?
A third. 36% are illiterate. And
a lot of people.
Formal banking is out of the reach. Is out of reach, which, and that this is the part where I didn't understand, right?
Yeah.
So what are you using as a benchmark for what inclusion is, right? And this is where it came up was.
Again, worse. What does he mean by formal banking is out of reach?
Yeah. So that was what we were saying. It was products and services like bank accounts, access to credit, home loans. That's formal.
So basically they're saying there are no
formal banking
bank branches closer to poorer people if you're talking bank accounts.
I don't think it's as simple as that. I think it's more in terms of you know, like how do you offer a banking service to somebody who doesn't fall into that kind of formal relationship, like let's just say You have a day job.
Right.
Right?
Well.
And then your day job pays you a salary.
Mm-hmm.
Where does that salary go?
To a bank.
Right. And then that bank then says, okay, we've got your money. What do you want us to do with it?
Yeah, I'd like you to invest it with that or savings or whatever.
Whatever, right? Yeah. I need access to the cash. I need to be able to make payments. I need a card so I can walk into a shop. Tap, swipe, whatever I need on the back of that salary. I can say, I'd like to buy a house or a car, and they'll extend credit to me. So how do you do that with somebody who's living in poverty, who doesn't have a salary coming in at the end of the month, right? Who's living sort of hand to mouth, scraping together a living.
Yeah.
Getting a bit of cash here, a bit of cash there, sometimes bartering, you know, stuff like that. So that's what I think, you know, I remember years back, we were working on a project to work with Stockfels. But the principle was that in South Africa, for you to get access to credit, right? I gave you the scenario, right?
Yeah.
But the banks were assessing you as an individual, right?
Yeah.
And because we have such disparity in what people are able to do with their money, people really are very distrusting of large companies, right?
Right, right.
So what we discovered was that they're not distrusting of each other.
Mm-mm.
So they'll trust each other with their own money. So Stockfel is, I'll give you cash. Together we'll decide what to do with that cash. And heaven forbid one of you do something daft with that money, right?
Which always happens.
Because we'll regulate, right? We'll self-regulate. We don't need some banking
with a contract.
With contracts. It's like,
no. I gave you money, you wrote it down. I know you have my money.
Right?
Yeah.
And we agreed what that money
most
is going to do.
We had a handshake agreement.
Right. But amongst all of us, right? So then me and a couple of guys got together and we were like, that's a major trust thing, right?
Yeah.
That's self-regulating. So why wouldn't the banks use that trust and offer that group, not the individuals,
yeah,
the group, the ability, right, to borrow? Especially if the collection of the money is regulated,
yeah,
by themselves.
Perhaps they don't have a way to measure that. They don't know the consistency of it because it's not recorded. You know it happens, but you don't actually have formal data of it.
Actually, it's worth probably around $8 billion a year. They know what the value is. Right. So it's not like they don't know.
Yeah.
But
Perhaps it's worth more to them in that way than it would if they regulate it or they create products around it. Then they won't make as much as they are currently.
I have no idea. I'll be honest with you. I don't know.
Which is almost backs to the question, financial inclusion for whose benefit?
But that's the point. People are financially including themselves.
Yeah.
Just not in that formal way, right? And I think that's where the issue was, is that how do you include yourself?
Right.
Because my money doesn't come in necessarily in a salary.
Yeah.
But what I do know is I've got to have that $100 at the end of the month. How I get it is actually immaterial. The fact is, if I'm buying a funeral policy, if I'm saving for groceries at the end of the year, if it's a holiday Stockfel, if it's whatever, right? Yeah. Whatever that savings mechanism is for, nobody asks you or says to you, do you have a job?
And all they ask is, will you be able to pay month end?
Can you, right? Yeah. And I found when we were trying to engage on this thing, right, around those products, was that they even had policies. Like they would say, you can miss 1 month, we'll carry you. You miss 2 months, we'll warn you, but we'll carry you.
Mm.
3rd month, hells no, you're out.
Sure. And what happens to the money you donated or you contributed?
Exactly.
That stays?
Yes. <Sure. laughs> So you were disincentivized to miss that payment, right?
More importantly, what's at stake.
Who are you doing that deal with?
Mm.
You're not doing it with strangers.
No. Somebody from your block, from your street.
This is your community.
Yeah.
You're going to be blacklisted in your community. That is far worse than a credit bureau blacklisting.
What is financial inclusion then? Because clearly people are included, just not perhaps the way banks would recognize inclusion.
Right. So that's where I think the angle of the story, I think, obviously was coming from a kind of digital perspective.
Mm, he did speak a lot about mobile money.
Right. And it was very much around the emergence of mobile money to include people. And that's cool. I get it. Right. You know, he spoke about the missing middle, for instance. 4% of sub-Saharan Africa were financially included by 2017, and only 43% by this year in 2024. Mm. That means more than half of sub-Saharan Africa.
Yeah, still not included.
It's still financially excluded, right? And
But perhaps they're excluded because they have this alternative market that they participating in. They have stock fails that they trust. I mean, I know now they have a lot of stock fails have clubs. They can do bulk buys at certain retails, and they know they can buy certain groceries in 6 months or at a yearly thing. So are they not included?
Yeah, so...
So they do put in money for a long term, and they do get some form of a product at the end.
Well, that's interesting because he did say also, he also mentioned in the story that 69% of South Africans are included,
69%.
Right?
That's
but the majority only use it to receive a salary, right?
Yeah.
Or a grant.
Mm.
And none of them, and almost no other services. So is that really financial inclusion? The fact that they have a bank account.
Yeah.
But what are they using it for?
Just to draw the money, not even transact with it.
Sorry, man. I get frogs in my throat.
Hey, what were you doing over the weekend? You have a glass of wine here.
This is true. Let me have a glass.
Yeah. Just don't throw the whole of it down your throat. It still needs you so
good. I thought water would be better, but I think you're...
No, it's worse.
So he also just kept going on the whole mobile money thing, right?
Right.
So that's the way in which you can get various other services. And obviously with this whole sort of intracontinental thing where you need to move money and there's a lot of migration in terms of workers and that sort of thing. So obviously you had things like Mukuru coming up, you know, and Mukuru's obviously Western Union, all the old guys used to do that. But then they created kind of almost separate currencies. And I mean, you don't want to get into the technical issues around money and the way, you know, the different types of money and currency conversions and regulations around that. But he brought this whole thing about mobile money. And as everybody does, the poster boy of mobile money is M-Pesa, right?
Yes. Tell me, does M-Pesa store, send and receive money?
Yes.
So there's all three. You don't just receive and draw.
No, you can store, yes. Because
what other products do you have in South Africa that actually stores? I know a lot of this e-wallet or cash send things, you can only store and draw. You can't sort of receive, store, and send. You can't have a three-way transactional thing. A lot of them is just two-way. You receive the money and you draw it.
Well, I mean, it's a very basic service. And I suppose in the South African context, then, you know, as soon as you can do that, you're a bank, right? So you need a license, right? So as soon as you can deposit and
put out,
withdraw, you're a bank. And of course, in South Africa, it's heavily regulated, right? So I just remember back in the day when M-Pesa came into play, this idea of converting airtime into currency, right? Because it's a digital wallet, essentially, right? So he does in the story bring up this idea that mobile money increases financial inclusion because now you can get some services, right? So the idea is you can deposit some money by buying airtime and then you can use it to pay for services, right, using your airtime. And I know in South Africa, for instance, it took a long while because then the mobile operators had to get financial services licenses.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then even now, you can only buy certain digital products. You can't exactly go out and buy a car with your airtime, right? So that was... And then obviously there's the advent of crypto, which very hard for a lot of people to understand and took me at least a year before I could figure it out myself. But what was very interesting was I actually spoke to a couple of Zimbabwean people. One was a gardener.
Yeah.
And they were using crypto to send money back to Zim.
What?
Right?
What?
Yeah. So this
idea. Using crypto?
Right, right.
I didn't know that.
Mm, because it sits on a separate network. It's not centrally. It's not centrally governed by.
They do pride themselves with the decentralized technology.
And absolutely, right? I don't think blockchain and all of that made any difference to the guy who was using it. He just understood that...
There's a product that can use to send money home.
Yeah. I buy crypto.
gone.
My family on that side, I can transact.
And I'm sure it hashes the value. So whether there's a coup that side, that money will not lose value by the time it gets there.
So financial inclusion then, even from a digital sense, right, is again complicated, right? However, the idea that inclusion has to be understood within that very corporate paradigm, right? If you look at it, this idea that it has to be one-on-one.
Right.
The service provider and the customer. It doesn't really consider. And yet, I have to say, I actually forgot about this a long time ago. I remember when we were trying to get like medical aid and employee benefits, right? Yeah. You can get group benefits from an insurance company, right? So they trust you that as a group,
you'll be able to pay for this.
You'll be able to pay for it, and you regulate because now everybody's attached to that one product.
Right.
But they won't do it for Stockfels. I mean, that's crazy, right? And I think for me...
So wait, when Onko Kamisa is 69% of the South African population is included, does it mean they have bank accounts?
Yes.
Just bank accounts?
Yes, but most of them use it to receive salaries and grants. So
just a bank account, just by having a bank account, it means you are included?
To some extent, yes. I mean, remember, to open a bank account, you have to have a whole bunch of things.
I would imagine inclusion would need some form of alternative scoring if I can't be scored from the traditional systems. Would it not?
I don't know. What do you mean?
Like, you can't score someone who lives in abject poverty the same way you'd score somebody in the middle class.
Yes. Right? And that's why they're excluded.
Right. Now, to include them, create an alternative scoring as a bank. Find other metrics to score them, to get a credit score from them, not the same metrics you use for the middle class. Because if you use the same metrics, you will not be able to score this guy.
I mean, that's interesting.
I'm cash heavy, how are you going to, what kind of methods are you going to use?
I can only assume that the banks have thought this through. I mean, we can't be the first ones to think about it, but...
But they have thought about it, but have they implemented it?
I don't know.
I don't know if there's an alternative scoring. I know when we worked on that project Goodair that I once told you about, one of our key benefits to the bank was that you will have some form of alternative scoring, which is what you guys are currently struggling with.
But so it was
clear that, well...
Because actually, if you really think about it, that was what our Stockfel situation was as well.
That was
right?
A threat. That was not alternative
scoring. No. I'm talking about in terms of the scoring. Because
it brought alternative scoring, but it was a bigger threat to products.
Not really. We were saying offer the product to the group. Right? Offer the product. You're just using a different metric to score the individuals in terms of their credit worthiness. We're saying offer the credit to the group, not to the individual.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
It does, but I'm sure they'll argue collateral.
But if you know that these guys have been going for years and years, and they have got a track record, then why would you not then acknowledge that track record? Plus, you must remember they have bank statements
that they
for do. The Stockfel.
Right. What's the difference now with the stock, with the club accounts that every bank is doing versus the Stockfels? Is it just that they can't, if you have a club account, you can borrow against that club account?
Because I think
so far
that is, no, but that is an important thing because we were also thinking about that because that's part of your, I've actually forgotten about that part. The collateral would be the cash that's sitting in the account.
Right. That's quite enough.
So if I'm sitting with R1 million, in the Stockfel account, then why can't I lend 15 grand to my membership? Because I know I'm sitting with a bar in the bank, right? It's just those kinds of things.
Yeah.
You see?
But I would imagine they that would eat into their margins, man. Will it? Because perhaps they make more money if.
If you go in one to one?
Individually, yeah. Versus going in a group.
But I don't know. I suppose the actuarial scientists would have to work that out. But it didn't make sense to me that you would take a risk on an individual.
Yeah. But you wouldn't take a risk on a group.
On a group. That just didn't make sense.
Because there's no way of maybe measuring that risk against a group.
But you could. If you're saying
unless by cash.
Collateral, right? Right. The cash is the collateral.
Right.
So, I mean, what was interesting was like some of the major retailers, right?
Yeah.
Would say, come and do kind of a lay-by with us for the whole year. So, right? They build up the capital, offer them the discounts at the end of the year, but hold on to the interest, right? And then just give them back exactly what they put in.
Right, right. I mean, they're committing it for 12 months after all.
Right, and there were no bank charges. So as long as me, as Earl, put in 100 Rand a month,
and I'm going to get
and I get 100 Rand worth. Back at the end of the year, I was happy.
And they're making margins on that.
They make margins on that. So there's millions of ways that these institutions... Okay, but... We're getting called out here by KB that we are taking too long.
Right.
But in the end,
cracking the whip.
The idea was with Ngogami's thing was, is mobile money like a silver bullet?
Clearly not.
And the truth is definitely not. And again, it goes back to the thing. Are we being led?
We are led.
By corporate, global north thinking around how Africans engage with money, with services, with products.
We definitely are led. I mean, if we're not led, show me how mobile money can bring about alternative scoring for people who are from previously disadvantaged. But
it does, though, because that's apart from the fact that
all it does is you've received money, you stored the money, and money went up.
Yeah, but you can also buy
it.
It
just tells you the frequency of it.
Well, maybe that's something we need to look at, is to see, is mobile money offering credit and that sort of thing?
Well, again, how many e-wallets do we have in South Africa that can actually receive, store, and purchase?
I don't know. We need to check that out.
I doubt. All we have is receive money, go draw it. You can't actually buy
anything. Or maybe that's just what we do. That doesn't necessarily mean it's not available. Yeah.
True. True. Well, I know you can only buy airtime when somebody sends you an e-wallet. You can't buy anything else with that.
Sure. But you can buy it with airtime. You can buy multiple other things.
Okay.
Right?
That's still too big a circular.
But okay. But what I do think is that inclusion in this context, just coming up with a technical or a digital solution to it doesn't necessarily...
Yeah.
Change the fact that we're not creating solutions for the continent.
No.
We are taking and importing these other products, trying to kind of shoehorn them
right
for us without really organizing those services and products around how people live on this continent.
All right, man. Gotta shut it down. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for watching the Angle Podcast. Be sure to subscribe, like, and share. The link to the article will be in the description below. Be sure to check out our other shows for Frame of Reference and the election series. We just completed the election series with Tyrisha Vet School of Governance. And the beautiful finisher that you see here, it's thanks to the Daily Store. Joey, we see you. Thanks.